I'm thrown off a little bit with Brad on my right now instead of my left. I have to reorient myself.
Oh, yeah.
Why, were you at Kind in part two? He followed?
No, but he was over here.
Yeah,
a lot of times, yeah.
I figured we'll give it up to Taylor.
Okay. So, I want to return again to the beginning of this discussion. Back on the page that's marked Tough Yud. And specifically, where it says mitzvah, the letter chet, actually right after that, or Rabbi Chedushei Rabbi Akiva Eger, it's the third line in on the paragraph that starts mitzvah. No, you didn't get his email. He emailed everybody he had addresses for. He's not here this week. He has a stomach virus. If you want, you're welcome to join us. But well, that's okay, neither do I.
It's ethical.
If you want. He had a stomach virus, and he figured better not to make it uncomfortable for people. Yes. Okay. So, the topic again that we're launching into here is that of breaking one's mitzvah in order to save one's life. And you'll need to look on with some because I'm out of shape at this point. I have this sheet which you'll need at some point. But specifically, the question is breaking one's mitzvah in order to save one's life, where we know that a Jew is supposed to violate his mitzvahs in order to save his life. That's the principle of v'chai b'hem, you shall live by them. The question is, and this is, we recognize, as we said last week, a purely hypothetical question because they're not asking us, but if a non-Jew had a situation in which he needed to save his life by breaking one of his laws, would he, according to the Torah, be permitted to do so? Because the mitzvah of v'chai b'hem, that you shall live by them and not die by them, is stated in a Jewish context specifically. So before we see it inside the text, if you take a look at the outside sheet, this is an attempt to make things clear before we see the sources. There are four arguments to be seen here. Argument number one, to justify the non-Jew breaking his mitzvah in order to save his own life, is that the Torah says, as we just said, v'chai b'hem, you shall live by them, indicating that God prefers that you live by his laws and not die by them. The argument against is in the second column there, where it says, yes, but that statement was made directly to Jews, who says you're allowed to extrapolate. Again, this is hypothetical in the sense that the non-Jew is not planning on asking me what he's allowed to do. Although, we will find a case in which the non-Jew asked the question. So, we'll see that in a moment. The second argument that we're going to see brought in favor of saying he's allowed to violate his mitzvah to save himself is the argument, well, Jews are allowed to. We have a general principle which you have no doubt figured out on your own at some point, even without learning it in the Talmud, which is, there is no such thing as something that Jews are allowed to do that non-Jews are not allowed to do. The Jews always have more prohibitions than non-Jews. There's no such thing as something that a Jew is allowed to do, but a non-Jew can't. If a non-Jew can't do it, it's a safe bet that a Jew can't do it also. So, if a Jew is allowed to break his laws to save himself, then it stands to reason a non-Jew is also allowed to break his laws to save himself. And that's the second argument that we're going to see. To which the response is, not so fast, because maybe a Jew really isn't quite permitted to break his laws to save himself. And that's a Shabbos point, specifically. That's where it comes up. The question I raised it last time, of whether Shabbos is what we call hutra or dechuya. Hutra means that Shabbos is permitted. That if I need to save a life on Shabbos by violating the laws of Shabbos, go ahead and do it. Everything is permissible. The other way to look at it, though, is that Shabbos is only pushed off minimally by the need to save a life, but that I am obligated to do everything within my power to avoid violating Shabbos. It's not really permitted, it's just that we overlook it because that's what we're supposed to do. And according to that, maybe you can't extrapolate from there to a non-Jew. This concept of dechuya is an odd concept. We're not seeing it at length right now. We're going to have to come back to it later in the Nishmas Avram at some point. But that's the argument against saying, well, Jews are allowed to, therefore non-Jews are allowed to. The third argument in favor of saying that the non-Jew should be allowed to violate his laws in order to save himself comes from a story involving a man named Naaman. Naaman was a general of a non-Jewish army, Arameans as I recall, and Naaman comes to the Navi, comes to the prophet, if I remember correctly it was Elisha, but I didn't actually look it up before the shiur, I should have, but Naaman comes to the prophet and says, I have a problem. I don't believe in idolatry. I have accepted upon myself, I am going to be I'm not converting, I'm not becoming a Jew, but I'm not going to be an idolater. I believe in your God. But the king, whose orders I obey, is an idolater. And when he goes in to bow to his idol, he has me kneel with him. So am I allowed to do this? He asks a shaila, Naaman. He says, what am I supposed to do? And the answer is, you're okay. As we'll see in a moment. The answer is, don't worry about it. So how can the Navi, how can the prophet declare, you're okay? Unless the answer is that in order to save his life, he's entitled to break his laws. Right? If he says to the king, actually, I don't bow, the next step is then you won't have a head on your shoulders either. Yeah?
But if he's not a Jew, then he doesn't have the obligation. So, that being said, he may be permitted to bow anyway, even if he doesn't believe in that of the idols.
Right, except that there is a rule. The non-Jews have 7 Noahide laws. One of them is not to worship idols. So, according to that, he does have such a rule. That's the presumption that we're working on, is that he has Noahide laws. So maybe if Naaman is allowed to violate his law to save his life, then that shows that they are permitted to do so. To which the response comes, idolatry might be different. Idolatry might be unique. And the reason idolatry might be unique is because, and we touched on this last time, and we'll see it again this week, because unlike with, let's say, murder, idolatry is really about intent. A person who goes through the motions of an act that somebody recognizes as an idolatrous act, but is thinking in something entirely different, really isn't worshiping idols. There are issues of appearances, we don't like doing it, rabbinically, whatever. But at the core, it's not idolatry. If he is bowing only in order to support his king and save his life, he's not worshiping idols. So maybe the rule is he's allowed to override that in order to save his life because it's not something he means, he doesn't intend it, but let's say it was murder. Let's say he needed to kill somebody to save his life. He wouldn't be allowed to do so because whether you intend to kill somebody or not, it's called murder. But that's the third argument. And then the fourth and final argument we will get to is the Rambam, in fact, talks about a case, which we'll get to, in which a person is going to violate a law in order to save his life. Not, though, the case that we've been talking about, where it's an illness, where a person needs to violate one of his laws in order to cure himself of disease, but rather the case where somebody has a gun to his head and says, you do this, or I'm going to shoot. And there, the Rambam writes, we're going to see the source inside, that he's allowed to violate his law. In the event that somebody holds a gun to his head and says, either you fill in the blank for whatever the prohibited behavior is, either you do that or I'm going to shoot, he's allowed to violate the law. So if so, then he should also be allowed to violate the law in order to save his life from a disease. What's the difference between being compelled by an outside person or being compelled because he's ill and he needs to cure himself? That's the fourth argument, to which the response is that in fact those two cases may be different. Yeah.
Well, in one case you may have immediacy.
Let's pretend both cases you have immediacy. I mean, I'm pretending. It's a bizarre case. I can't think of a possible case in which someone is ill and needs to violate one of the 7 Noahide laws in order, and that's going to cure him. In older times, with the type of medicine they had, you could envision such a case. One of the 7 Noahide laws is not to eat from a live animal. In Greek medicine, I could envision a case in which the doctor says, you need to have something that was taken from the animal while the heart was still beating or something, and that's going to be your cure. Some something that sounds bizarre to us, but to them, you know, could well be. There are other cases. It's possible. Let's say they have a relic that they associate with an idol and they believe it has magical powers. So this fellow is told, if you embrace the relic, then you'll be cured. Strange, but theoretically possible. But it doesn't need to be possible, because really this last point is the one that to me is the most fascinating in the discussion. Because it has ramifications far beyond the non-existent non-Jew who's going to ask me this question about whether he can save his life. The question is, do I look at the case of somebody holding a gun to his head and saying, do this or die? Do I look at that as any different from the case of the person who needs to take a medicine or do some therapeutic act in order to save his life? Is there a difference between being compelled by an aggressor, an anus, as I call it on the sheet, and being compelled by an illness? So that's where we have to go with this. So now let's read. Having had this little rundown of the four arguments, maybe that will make our discussion here a little bit more coherent. Or not, but, we can try. Four lines up from the bottom, in the column where we have the letter Chet. So it's four lines up from the bottom. If you want to look on with him, because I don't have any more on those sheets. He says, see the writings of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, living in the 18th century. Shekosev b'shem ha-sefer Tevas Gomeh. He quoted the work Tevas Gomeh, written by the Prima Gadim. Prima Gadim is the author of a commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Code of Jewish Law, but his Tevas Gomeh is a commentary on the Torah. And there, in his Tevas Gomeh, he wrote, V'venoch misukan. If you're dealing with a non-Jew who is dangerously ill, is it permissible for a Jew to give the non-Jew food that is prohibited to the non-Jew under his seven mitzvot? Let's say this piece from the live animal. Are you allowed to give it to him? Remember that a Jew is not allowed to mislead a non-Jew. You're not allowed to do something that could cause him to sin. So are you allowed to cause him to stumble by giving him something that is treif as far as he's concerned?
Does he know? Are you advising him?
Let's say he knows.
Well, then you're not misleading.
But you're giving him the means. It's true. It's not misleading him, but you're giving him the means of sinning. I'm not allowed to give a Jew something non-kosher to eat. Why would I be allowed to give a non-Jew something that was not kosher for him?
Well, in the example, if it's to help him, if it's like a substitute for medication, if it's medication, you would.
Except that's precisely Tevas Gomez's question. He says, the Yesh Lomar, because you could say, we're on the top of the second column, the Vachai Bohem, that this law of you shall live by them and not die by them, below Shayamus Bohem, be Yisrael Nehemar, that was God's command to us. Maybe it's not permitted for him to do this to save his life. And therefore, you would be causing him to stumble. Adkan Lashono. That's the end of the quote from Rabbi Akiva Eiger quoting the Tevas Gomeh. And now he writes, this is the Nishmas Avram writing. He says, V'lo havinosi. He says, I don't understand. Halo posek harambam. The Rambam rules, ben noach she'onso anos la'avor al achas mi mitzvosav muter lo la'avor. If a non-Jew is compelled by someone to violate one of his own Noahide laws, and it's a do this or die situation, he is permitted to do so. What's the difference between being compelled by an aggressor and being compelled because of illness, right? This is the question that we asked before. That I don't have the sheet, I don't have another copy of the sheet that we have here, but you can look on with Dorit. So that, he says, is his question. That's what he doesn't understand. He's brought up our fourth argument, the argument from the Rambam. He then continues to quote the Darchei Tshuva. I do have one of these for you. We spent the first few minutes going through these four arguments, but I'm not sure how intelligible it'll be just from the sheet. But Shuvra Isi, Shagam HaDarchei Tshuva Kosev. He says, I then saw the Darchei Tshuva, one of the Munkacher rabbis, either the first or the second. I think it's the second. He wrote, V'ayim B'sefer Tevas Gomeh Al HaTorah. He quoted that same work, the Tevas Gomeh. Parsha Shmos Os Aleph Sha'amar Al Mechkar Beben Noach Misukan. He also asked the question about a non-Jew who is dangerously ill. Ishari Li Yisrael Lahoshit Lo Eber Menachay Lerap Oso, as to whether a Jew is allowed to give him meat from a live animal to heal him. He makes the same point. Maybe that this rule of violate the law to save your own life, maybe that's specific to God's command to Jews. But not for a ben Noach, not for a Noachide. And therefore you are causing him to stumble. It's that fundamental question of maybe this is a command only for Jews, based on the fact that in the Torah it's addressed to Jews. So that's his opening question. He says, I have two sources, both of which are serious halachic texts, both of which quote the Tevas Gomet, which is written by a serious halachic authority, making the statement of, I don't know whether a non-Jew is allowed to violate one of his laws in order to save his life, in the same way that a Jew is supposed to. The Nishmas Avram is bothered, because here we have a line in the Rambam, which he referenced a few minutes ago, in which the Rambam says that if a non-Jew is approached by an aggressor who says, break one of your laws, or I'm going to take your life, he's allowed to break his laws. So why is there any further discussion? What's the difference between doing this in order to save your life from an aggressor and doing this in order to save your life from a disease? That's the question at hand. Okay. Vika Ace. He says, I'm just trying to figure out in what order to do this. I'm going to stop reading from in here for a minute and take you to the side sheets, because we need to read a Gemara in order to make the next piece of this make sense. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. I already told you the story in the beginning. It's the story of Naaman. Naaman is a non-Jewish general. He is an Aramean. And he comes to the Navi, to the prophet, I think it was Elisha, and he says to him, I have a problem. My problem is that when my king goes in to bow to his idol, I have to go in and support him and bow also. And I don't believe in it, but if I don't do it, he's going to kill me. So what are my options here? And Elisha's response seems to be, he's okay. From which we think we can extrapolate that one is allowed to violate one of his Noahide laws in order to save his life. So take a look at the passage in the Gemara. The first version of this, it's going to appear in Bayes also, the first version of this is how Rashi reads the Gemara. Bo mi name Rabbi Ami. They asked Rabbi Ami the following interesting question. Ben Noach mitzuva al kedushas Hashem, Oein mitzuva al kedushas Hashem. Does a non-Jew have a mitzvah of sanctifying the name of God, such that we would say, oh, he can't violate one of his mitzvahs, because he has a mitzvah of sanctifying the name of God? Amar Abaye, Tar Shema. Abaye says, well, come in here from the following. We learned, Sheva mitzvos nitztavu b'nei Noach, that the Noachites have seven Noachite laws. I know what's on the list of the seven Noachite laws, right? The list on the seven Noachite laws is not to worship idols, not to practice immorality, not to murder, not to eat from a live animal, not to blaspheme against God, not to steal, and to set up courts. Those are my seven Noachide laws. If you ever want an easy way to remember that, if you ever want to see an easy way to remember that, it's the big three, the three cardinal sins, so to speak, that we think of, idolatry, adultery, and murder. And then separate from that, it's Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet. Eiver min hachai is a piece from a live animal. Bet is Birkat Hashem, which is blessing God, but it's the opposite there. It's blasphemy. The Gimel is Gezel, which is theft. And Dalet is Dinim, setting up courts. So, a little mnemonic there. In any case, I know the list of seven, and none of them are Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name. The closest you can come is that you shouldn't worship idols, but that's a stretch. So he says, V'im Isa, if you really believe that he has a mitzvah of sanctifying God's name, then Tamnei Havim, then there are eight, not seven. Amar Le Rava, to which Rava replies, that's okay, because I'm willing to count it as a part of the stretch. Inhu, V'chol Abizrayu. He says, when we say seven, it means seven categories, but they have all sorts of sub-elements, which I added in brackets, meaning Kiddush Hashem will be included as a sub-element, as one of his Yehareg Valyavors, not to violate them. So the Gemara says, Maiha viyala. Okay, so what's the law? Is that really true? Non-Jews have this as one of their laws. I understand you can try to fit it into the seven Noahide laws. That may be, this is... So I'm not sure if when he says, Inu v'chola bizrayu, one way to read it would be that it's a subcategory of idolatry. The other way to read it, which I think is what he means, is that it's really a function of all of them. In other words, by observing the mitzvah, he is fulfilling Kiddush Hashem. I think that's what he means. Okay. My haviyala. So what's the rule? Ah, Rav Ada bar Ava. Amri bei Rav. So Rav Ada bar Ava says, they said in the yeshiva of Rav, Ksiv, we have the following sentence in that story with Naaman. He said, La davar hazeh yislach Hashem la'avdecha. For this, may God forgive your servant. Meaning, may God forgive me. Bibo'adoni beis Rimon, when my master, the king, goes to the house of Rimon, the place of the idolatry, lehishtachavoz shama, to bow there. V'hu nish'an al yadi, he leans on me, I'm supporting his body. V'hishtachavesi, and I bow. That's his plea to the Navi, to the prophet. What do I do? Uchsiv, and the pasuk says, the response was, v'yomer lo lech l'shalom. He said to him, go in peace. And Lech L'Shalom is a positive statement. Lech L'Shalom is, be well, you're doing fine. That's Lech L'Shalom, right? We distinguish the Gemara at the end of Brachos, Lech L'Shalom, Lech B'Shalom. You're not supposed to say to somebody, Lech B'Shalom. You say, Lech L'Shalom, go to peace, not that you're already in peace, because the person who's already in peace is no longer breathing. So the message here he gives him is positive. It indicates approval. V'im Isa, if it were really so, meaning, as I added there, to Chayav B'Kiddush Hashem, if he's really obligated in honoring God's name, then Lo Lamele, he shouldn't say to him Lech L'Shalom. Right? So the Gemara gives a separate answer. The Gemara gets us out of the problem differently. The Gemara's answer is Ha Bitzina Ha Befarasya. The answer may be he's exempt because it's in private. It's not an issue of Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name, if there are no witnesses. Besides the king, who's not going to be impressed. We generally assume, though, Kiddush Hashem is in front of 10 others. The 10 Jews, 10 non-Jews, that's its own discussion. But the way that this read of the Gemara goes, which is Rashi's way to read the Gemara, okay? The way that Rashi reads this Gemara, as I've put it out here on the sheet with the punctuation that I gave it, the conclusion here is that normally a non-Jew may well be obligated in Kiddush Hashem. Naaman is personally exempt because what he's doing is in private. But if it's in public, he in fact would not be allowed to do what he's doing. Okay, that's one. If it was a mega church, right, then things would be different. That's not a statement about Christianity. Don't have a discussion right now about Christianity and idolatry. I don't think that's too far afield. But the point is, the conclusion as Rashi reads it is that a non-Jew is obligated in sanctifying God's name, and therefore the argument could be made he's not allowed to violate one of his laws to save his life if he has witnesses. That's one way to read it. The Rambam read this Gemara differently. In Source Beis, you see a different ending to this Gemara. Source Beis is the same words, but with the Rambam's punctuation. He says, "My haviyallah, what's the law?" And Rav Ada bar Ava quotes the same pasuk from Naaman and the same response from Elisha. Vayomer lo lech l'shalom, he said to him, go in peace. We're on the second line, the middle of the line. V'im Isa, if it were really true that he's obligated in Kiddush Hashem, lo lemalei ha bitzina ha befarhesya. If it were really true that he was obligated in Kiddush Hashem, then why wouldn't he have told him, you're okay because you're in private? The fact that he didn't give him a nuanced response to explain, here you may not, indicates that Naaman actually is exempt altogether. There's a great paper. I should email you this paper. This is one of my favorites of all time. There was a paper written for, I think it was actually for the National Endowment of the Arts in the U.S. on Beit Midrash study and the way people learn in a Beit Midrash. It's a magnificent paper. And at one point, he gives this great anecdote about students in yeshiva. When they made an announcement, there was a sign up in yeshiva about people taking seconds in the kitchen, and you're not supposed to take seconds, you know, because people haven't necessarily had firsts or whatever it was. And he has an account there of the way that some wise guy repunctuated the signs that it ended up being okay to take seconds. I will send you this paper because it's a great read in general. It's a fascinating read. But in any case, the... I have to make a note for myself, so I'll send you the paper. The point is that the way that the Rambam reads it, the conclusion is that a non-Jew is not obligated to Kiddush Hashem. Rashi's read is he is obligated. Rambam's read is that he's not. From the same Gemara, the same words. Okay. If you take a look at the Kesef Mishnah in Source Gimel, the Kesef Mishnah is Rabbi Yosef Karo's commentary to the Rambam. He spells it out. He spells out what the Rambam is saying. The Im Isaf was really true. The Muzhar, that he is instructed in Kiddush Hashem, Havaleila Meimar, then Elisha should have said to him, Bitzina Mutter, but perhaps you answer that you're allowed in private, that you're not allowed in public. Elo Amar Leistam Leich LeShalom. He just said to him, go in peace. Alma, we see, da'afilu b'farhesya eino muzar, that even in public, he's not commanded. He's exempt from this mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem altogether. Okay. Having read that those sources, let's now read the Nishmas Avraham. I hope that will put us in good stead. What do you mean?
For part of his life, he was the physician to...
The Rambams, you mean. They meant Namans. Yeah. The Rambam's position will be different in the sense that...
In terms of his life experience as well, in terms of the role he played.
But is he, you're suggesting that he ends up having to give people Abram and Hachai to save their lives? It's an interesting idea.
He lived in a different time, different circumstance, different environment.
But same Torah. I would be loath without any evidence to... Okay. So he says, we're now at the bottom paragraph on page Tafyud. V'ka'ez histakalti b'sefer Tevas Gomeh. He says, go back to your primary sources always. I went and looked at the Tevas Gomeh, he says. V'zelashono, and this is in fact what he says. He's commenting on the case in the Torah, I mentioned this last week, in which Moshe apparently, at least according to one line of interpretation, decides to delay circumcising his son because it will be dangerous to him because he has to travel to Egypt. So he doesn't want to give him a bris milah and then take him on the trip. That's the way that it's commonly understood. So there, he's delaying a command from God in order to save a life. So he says, "Bapasuk vayhi baderech bamalon." On that pasuk, on that sentence, where we're told they were on the way, they're at the inn. Sheila, he asks a question. Ben Noach Mesukan. If a non-Jew is dangerously ill, can you give him food that is treif for him in order to heal him? Ayin re'em. So he says, see Rabbi Leo Mizrahi's comment. Behade emol ve'etze sakana. On that line where we say that Moshe said, if I circumcise him and then get on the road, it'll be dangerous. So the Re'im says, V'chai bohem b'Yisrael davka, that this sentence of, you shall live by them, is specific to Jews. V'lekamidi the li'Yisrael shari, and there is nothing that is permitted for a Jew and prohibited for a non-Jew, as we said in our introduction, and that was one reason to argue that a non-Jew should be allowed to do this, because after all, Jews are allowed to break their laws to save their lives, so a non-Jew should be allowed to also. Generally speaking, there's nothing that a Jew is allowed to do, and a non-Jew is prohibited from doing. It goes the other way around. But he says, Esher pikuach nefesh dechuyehi lo mishri. As I said in our introduction, the argument in response is that maybe our prohibitions are not lifted in order to permit us to save a life. It's what we call dechuya. The prohibition is sort of shoved back a little bit, but it's still there. And I'm not justified. So therefore, maybe you can't. Ayin or Chaim Simen Shin Chav Ches, Ayin Parshas Drachim Daf. He says, you know, see there's all sorts of discussions there. Visham Tzideid, and there, he also continued to say, Bishvichus Damim, Ibn Noach Yehareg Va'al Ya'avor. What if it's a case of murder? Is a non-Jew allowed to commit murder in order to save his life? And the application there is the Mialdos, the Jewish midwives in Egypt, who will not commit murder in order to save their lives. Right? So is a non-Jew allowed to commit murder to save his life or not? So Ayin Rambam, and he says, now see the Rambam, and here we go. This is the Rambam quote that we saw earlier. Anas she'anas leben Noach al achas misheva mitzvos. If somebody, an aggressor, comes along and tries to force a non-Jew to violate one of his laws, afilu avoda, we're now on the page marked Tafyud Aleph, afilu avoda zara, even idolatry, kotzer. He's exempt from liability. Now I have tough kidamas to give out. You can have one too. I'll sign it for you. Afilu avodah zarah potter, even if it's idolatry, the Rambam says he's exempt. Mashmud sounds like kol sheva mitzvahs, kol zayin mitzvah shvichos damim gamkein. It sounds like the Rambam is saying that he can do anything in order to save himself from an aggressor. Ume avodah zarah ein raya kol kach, but he says maybe idolatry isn't good proof. As we already said, delibo lashamayim, because with idolatry, it's about what you're thinking and feeling. And he's not really thinking and feeling idolatry. So maybe the fact that he can do that is because it's not truly idolatry. With murder, you don't have such a justification. The person is dead, whether you intended, wanted to kill him or not. So he says you can't prove anything necessarily from there. Mashein kein sha'ar mitzvahs as opposed to other mitzvahs. Ula Rashi Sanhedrin lo ifshita bayan, and not only that, according to Rashi's read of that Gemara, which we saw, Rashi believes that in fact Naaman is not allowed to worship idols, assuming there are other people around, right? Even though it's not his intent, so he says, then for sure we won't. Our question will not be answered. Ayin kesef mishnasham ad kan lashono. That's the end of the line in the Tevas Gome. So what he's told us is he's gone through briefly those four arguments that we brought. Right? He brought the Hachai Bohem, right? You shall live by them and not die by them, but said, well, maybe that's just to Jews. He brought the point that Jews are allowed, and therefore non-Jews should be allowed. And he said, maybe not, because maybe it's not that we're allowed, it's not mutter for us to violate our laws to save our lives, it's dechuya, it's just a temporary overriding, maybe that's not the same thing. He brought the point that Naaman is allowed to abet idolatry, right? But his response is twofold. Number one, maybe idolatry is different. Idolatry might be unique because it's about intent. And also, according to Rashi's read, Naaman isn't allowed to worship idols. So that's a second objection. And then the last point is, the one he hasn't yet answered, the Rambam says, you're allowed to do this to save yourself from an aggressor. So maybe that should be, unless you can prove that somehow saving yourself from an aggressor is different. And so he continues on the fifth line. V'kosev sham ha-pesach ha-teva. The Pesach ha-teva commentary to the Tevas Gome writes the following. Avodah Zarah, Pasha lala heter midivrei ha-rambam perikud me'elchos malachim. He says idolatry is concluded to be permitted based on what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Malachim, as we've seen, about saving yourself from an aggressor. The Nishma demutter l'rapos atzmo be'isur demali ones zeh o anas. What would emerge is that it's permitted, because what's the difference between the ones of illness, right? Ones meaning a case where you have no choice, or an anas, an aggressor. Afsha yesh lepak beik, he says, granted there is room to question this. V'lomar davka avodah zarah mutter lo la'avor b'makom ones. Then maybe only idolatry is permitted. The yesh lo takana she libo l'shamayim, because there is the redeeming factor that your intent is for God. U'avodah zarah talya ha'ikar b'machshava shebelev, and it's really about what you're feeling. Avolavor sha'ar isurin, but to violate other prohibitions, v'kol shkein shvichos damim, certainly murder. The yesh bo svara d'may chazis, where the argument could be made, what justification do you have to save yourself by killing somebody else? Maybe this other person is more valuable than you are. Who says that your life is more valuable than his? So that's the argument that he brings.
Is he negating self-defense?
Well, this isn't really self-defense, because I'm defending myself from this person by killing the third party.
Oh. Well,
that if you can kill the aggressor, he's completely justified. He has no problem with that idea. So he says, Yeshlom, or the answer, perhaps, it's prohibited. Ah, however, his concluding line, Midisasam le harambam. V'kasav stam sheva mitzvos, mashma da'akul hu mutter lavor b'makom ones. His conclusion is, since the Rambam did not differentiate between idolatry and the others, he is willing to conclude and say that the non-Jew is allowed to violate his sheva mitzvos, in the case where he has to do it to save his life, whether from an aggressor or from illness. And now, Rabbi Dr. Avram resumed commenting. The paragraph starts with the word v'omnam. V'omnam, in truth, samachti me'od liro says divrei ha-tevas gome. He says, I was very happy to see what the Tevas Gome wrote. Because even though they only quoted the part of him that said, hey, maybe V'chayv Bahem only applies to Jews, in truth, his conclusion is a lenient one. That a non-Jew is allowed to violate his commands to save his life, as the Rambam wrote. So he's happy with the ending. But he's not done. And this is where it gets to the particularly fascinating point. Ach kashali, I have a problem. Lama gamha Rabbi Kiva Eger, v'gamha darchi tshuva, heviyu rakis ahava minashal tevas gomeh, v'loas hamaskana. Why did they only bring the first part of the Tevas Gomer? Why didn't they bring the ending? What did they see about the ending of the Tevas Gomer that they didn't like? Ublil it cited the Rambam Meforash, and they didn't cite the Rambam either. What's going on? And the answer is what comes in his next line. Are we clear with what we've done so far? Sort of clear?
Sort of.
I understand the philosophical problem. How can you tell him that he can't break the law in order to save his life? That's such a value of ours. But what we're working with here in general, and this is an overarching issue, is needing to ground the conclusions that we draw in the text in order to be able to justify it from it.
But he came around, after all that, to the Rambam.
Yes.
So he came around to the Rambam in the end. So, why do you need that whole...
Because we aren't at the end yet.
Okay, but here...
So at this juncture.
He came around to the Rambam. Mm. So.
Because if I... No, because... Well, that's true, but if I had just quoted the Rambam, then I wouldn't understand why there's a problem here. There is a problem, fundamentally. And what tips him off that there's a problem is the fact that the others who are writing on this didn't quote that Rambam. They must have a reason to think the Rambam doesn't apply. So it's only by going through this that you get that. That's number one. Number two is that it's valuable to go through this because this is the nature of Psak as a whole, is an area over here you think has no relation to anything else suddenly turns out to have relevance to a topic that you never would have envisioned, but if you didn't learn it, you'd never know it. This is one of the objections that I have to, and greater figures than I have, to people who try to paskin by using database searches and whatnot, is you only find that what you're looking for. You need to develop a much broader database of knowledge.
You have to learn how to fish.
You know, in order to figure out where the analogies are, you know, and have a basis for drawing them.
So can you just, because I'm not entirely clear, I don't know about anybody else, but just recap what the Havamina is of the Tevet Goma and
sure.
What Maskana is.
Sure. His Havamina is to say that V'chayv Bahem is only for Jews, and that therefore a non-Jew would not necessarily be permitted to violate his laws to save his life, because V'chayv Bahem is for Jews, and because the fact that Jews are allowed to save their lives by violating the law, that may be a function of it being dechuya rather than hutra. It's not really permitted. It's just sort of something that gets pushed off. It's not on the level of permitting something in a full sense. And that Naaman is not a good example either, because I'll take Rashi's read and say that Naaman really isn't allowed, except what he's doing is a private thing, and that's what makes it permitted. Or that Naaman's case is different because it's idolatry, and idolatry is uniquely dependent on intent. These other mitzvot are not.
Just going back to the beginning, we have the four acquitted,
exactly.
Or the four that do not.
Right. So that's all Havamina. And his conclusion is, well, it's okay, because the Rambam said that if you have an aggressor, you're allowed to violate one of your laws to save your life. That was his conclusion, which they hadn't quoted. So now he's going to try to show why. And this is where I mentioned at the end last week, we're going to get into an interesting double effect discussion.
Are there no philosophers or wise men or... people not equivalent, but knowledgeable B'nai Noach that write on this stuff? I mean, why is it a Jewish philosophy doing this?
Because historically...
Jewish ethics and writings.
Because historically, Noachites didn't really care much about this. They weren't going to write about what their obligations are under Jewish law. I mean, no Roman is going to care.
But they don't abide by Jewish law.
Correct. Which is why this is, by and large, a hypothetical question. The only way in which this becomes relevant is the case they keep mentioning here about the non-Jewish patient who comes to you and the cure you're going to recommend to him involves violating one of his seven laws.
I think the question...
That's the hypothetical case.
So if you're the Jewish...
You're the Jewish doctor for the non-Jewish patient. Can you aid him or cause him to violate one of his laws? That's the only case where you have that.
Snake poison venom that can only...
Maybe
right.
David will stroke the kindness.
No, I think the question
was very helpful.
Yeah.
Is why, in this context, would they may not at least make some reference to whatever authority may exist within the faith of the idolater?
Because they're not, they don't speak to the issue of Noahide law. It isn't up to a Christian priest or to a Muslim imam or whatever you want to pick to decide whether he's obligated or not obligated in Noahide law. Noahide law within the Torah assumes that there is a Torah and that the Torah is supposed to be the authority.
Well, if you're a Christian, you still assume that the Torah has some authority. It hasn't been thrown out.
Well, that depends on your variety of Christianity. They differ in their approaches.
But you know what? You can't just make a generalized...
No, let them do what they want to do. My question is what's the Torah's recommendation? Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm looking at the time and realizing that we're short, and next week we don't meet, and the week after that is one of the medical halacha bigger topics. So I want to make sure to get through at least enough of this that we'll have answered the question rather than wait 3 weeks and have to restart everything. So I'm cutting you off for that. I apologize. But otherwise, we're going to have a problem. So he says, V'kasav li, under ha-hevdel bein ones shal anas u'bein ones shal machala, the difference between ones of an anas, an aggressor, and ones of disease. V'kasav li agon r'shlomo zalman Orbach zatzal. So he says, r'shlomo zalman Orbach answered me. He wrote me this. Yesh hevdel bein ones shel anas ubein ones shel machala. There is a difference between being compelled due to an aggressor and being compelled due to a disease. Ukumosha pasak harambam al yisrael sha'avar velo neharag al gimel averos shechayev lehei hareg. He says the Rambam ruled that if a Jew who was supposed to, give up his life, didn't. Let's say a Jew was faced with the decision of worship idols, or I'm going to shoot you. And the Jew decided, you know what? He's going to bow down to the idol. In such a case, the Rambam writes, "Demikol makom im avar patur mipneshu anus." The Rambam says he's exempt from liability. We're not going to try him because ultimately, what he should have done, shouldn't have done. Bottom line is, he was compelled. You don't punish someone for something they were compelled to do. But nonetheless, pasak beperek he mehelchos yisodei haTorah halacha vav bechol asha over v'nisrape bohem shehu baonesh haroilo v'hainu mebneishu atzmo bachar bazeh ve'ein mi she'anzal kach barushlom azalman. Noted that the Rambam separately writes that if a Jew is ill and he heals himself using one of the big three averos somehow, then he gets whatever punishment is suitable for that avera, because he chose to do it. So he says, look at the Rambam himself. There's a contradiction in the Rambam. The Rambam says that if a Jew is forced to do one of his big three, and he doesn't give up his life, he goes and he does it, then he's exempt from liability. But if a Jew chose to do one of the big three in order to save his life from an illness, then he is going to be liable. What's the difference? All he's done is he's pointed out that there is a difference. Why is there a difference? So he continues. I'm rushing a little bit. V'zeh lashon Rambam. He says, here's the Rambam quote. Kol mi she'ne'amar bo yavor ba'al yehareg v'ne'arag. Anybody for whom the Torah says that he should violate the law and not be killed. You know, I'm actually going to jump the text because it doesn't add anything to the question as we've already framed it. So I'm jumping the paragraph that starts with Zelashon Rambam all the way down to where it says Kosev HaOr Sameach. The Or Sameach is Rameir Simcha Cohen of Tvinsk. He lived about 130 years ago in Poland. He was a tremendous scholar, and he wrote, among other things, a commentary to the Rambam. So he gives you the following analysis of why I would distinguish between compulsion via an aggressor and compulsion via an illness. He says, Havadai. Dilo dami lamasha pasak bahalacha dalid, dimamakam ones, apimidi de arag val yavor, im avar, ein onchen oso, da ones rachmana patre. He says the case of somebody who violates because of an illness does not resemble the law where somebody violates because of an aggressor, where we say that he was compelled and therefore he is exempt from liability. Disvarahu, it's logical, he says, davka im onsin oso shayarog es ploni. He says specifically, if a person is compelled to kill somebody, olegalos arayos, or a person is forced to commit an act of sexual immorality, deino osa meritzono, he's not doing it because he has any desire to. He doesn't want to do the action. Rak beritzon acherim sherotze sheyargos ploni. It's somebody else who wants him to do this, who wants him to murder someone. Vimlav, and if he doesn't do it, yehareg al devar sheino hareg ploni. And if he doesn't do it, then they're going to kill him for not having killed so and so. Im kain, if so, misibas mi ba hariga so im yahargenu hamahan so. So what is the cause for him murdering somebody? What is the cause for him dying in the event that he refuses? Misibas sheino rotza la ploni, because he didn't want to kill this other person. Avokan, but here, hacholi haba elav hu below sibas shum davar. The illness is not caused by anything. It's simply so. He's sick. There's no aggressor. There's no other intellect involved. Rak yochol lahatzlas atzmo bedam ploni o bavodah zara plonis. It's just that the only thing he can do to save himself is use this blood or this idol or whatever it is. Im kein zem mikri chafetz gamur meritzono bechayav. Then this is called wanting to do something, because he wants to live, and therefore he wants to do this. You see the difference? The question is, whose will is behind the action? Where there's an aggressor, it's the aggressor's will, and he's simply bending to the aggressor's will. Where he's curing himself of an illness, it's his will that he should take whatever it is.
Have the status of an individual.
That is right. That's exactly right. The illness itself is not an aggressor. The illness is simply a circumstance. And he himself becomes the initiator of the action. So he says, "Im kein zem mikri chafetz gomer meritzono b'chayav." He is somebody who desires to save himself. Ukmosha kol rotzeach rotzeh lishpoch hamasel liroz nakam. No different from a murderer who wants to take out his rage on somebody. V'lachein kan chayav b'im nisrape b'chol onshe beizdin v'kayotze v'otimzel aposkim choshen mishpat, etc. He says, that's the idea. When someone does something because he is ill, and he does it in order to save himself from the illness, it's considered to be an act that he initiated. As opposed to someone who does something because someone is forcing him to do so, where he is really not an actor at all. He's simply the tool of this other party.
If an individual poisons someone and there happens to be medication or something that can be taken to save.
So that's interesting. So now there is an aggressor.
And in the example of your aggressor, how about a situation arises where there may be a way of ransoming or giving a tribute or negotiating rather than making it so black and white that...
Well, if he has another option, then he has another option. Then all bets are off. We're assuming that there are no other options. But you're right. If there is, then that changes.
If you relate that some illnesses were perceived to be in the Torah to be connected to other things besides just being
pure. Yeah,
illness.
But he won't. It doesn't matter to him. That'll be the playing field. It's not an intelligent agent. The question of where he's been poisoned, I think, is an interesting one, because then there is an aggressor, but the aggressor isn't telling him take the cure. The aggressor is simply
telling
poisoning
him. He's got an option. Let's say the aggressor says
he's
got an option.
Are we still talking about B'nai Noah?
Yeah, we're still talking about Jews. Well, actually, it's funny that you asked that, because this is going to have to come back to the Jew case also now.
Ultimately.
The case, I skipped it because just in the interest of time, but the Rambam did bring in the question about a Jew who's in this circumstance and who was supposed to give his life rather than violate, and he chose not to. So yes, then it will become relevant for the Jew also. But it's also, this is where I wanted to bring in the double effect point. effectively what we're saying here is that there are two different ways to read the same action. A person who kills somebody because he's being forced to, because someone has a gun to his head and says, I'm going to kill you if you don't, is viewed as innocent because that wasn't what he was trying to do. He wasn't trying to kill anybody. We don't look at the act of killing. We look at him as somebody who has simply tried to get out of a bad situation. Whereas the person who is trying to cure his illness, and he's doing this in order to do it, we're not willing to look at him as attempting to cure his illness. We look at him solely as attempting to kill the other person. It's a very odd distinction that he's drawing.
Strange. I mean, we put in pig valves in people all the time, Jews and non-Jews. I mean, that's not...
Well, that's not a problem for a Jew. That's not a problem for either one, because if not, you're not eating it.
Oh, pardon me. Okay.
No, that's serious. In other words, there's no prohibition of benefit from them. The prohibition is ingestion. Okay. We have things that you're not allowed to benefit from. We have things that you're not allowed to eat.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's a popular point. It was on, apparently, there's a television show called Grey's Anatomy where this came up several years ago as a plot line, and people kept calling me after that, like, what are they talking about?
You're not eating the pig, you're just putting...
But they put a valve from a pig. Yeah. There's absolutely no problem, but the writers on the show didn't know that, and they had some a Jewish person refusing to accept the...
Well, I think that people do ask that. So the issue of you will live by them, then you cannot do that, obviously, for the three other reasons. That's the point you're making here.
Would be that you wouldn't be allowed to. All right. There's a lot more that we have to see here. We didn't succeed in finishing it, but at least we started on the solution. Next week...